This is CICK News.
Nearly 10 years after the BC toxic drug crisis public health emergency was first declared, the toxic drug crisis remains one of the most devastating public health issues in the province. Since 2016, more than 16,000 people in BC have died from unregulated drug toxicity, making it the leading cause of death for people aged 10 to 59, surpassing deaths from accidents, suicides, and homicides combined. While the crisis affects every part of the province, the impact in the north is especially severe. Northern Health continues to record some of the highest death rates in BC, according to coroner's reports, with recent figures showing rates as high as 44 deaths per 10,000 people, which is well above many other regions. Fentanyl and other increasingly toxic substances dominate the unregulated supply. And today, most deaths happen indoors, often when people are using alone, making timely intervention difficult. For northern communities, the crisis is further complicated by geography, access to services, and ongoing inequities, particularly for Indigenous people who continue to be disproportionately impacted. To talk more about what the past decade has looked like in northern BC, as well as what comes next, I spoke with Northern Health's Chief Medical Health Officer, Dr. Raquel Kling.
We're talking about 10 years of the toxic drug crisis in the province. And looking back over the past decade, what would you say that you see as the biggest shifts in the toxic drug crisis, particularly in northern BC communities compared to urban centers?
Well, I think a real shift that I've seen, regardless of where people live, is just how toxic the drug supply is. And we've seen shifts in what's contaminated in the drug supply, and things are getting more and more dangerous to people who use substances. And I think that's important to recognize and still be aware that, you know, even though we're 10 years in, that the drug supply is still incredibly toxic and causing a lot of people to die from using substances.
You kind of mentioned what I was talking about, which is that the drug supply becoming increasingly toxic, unpredictable. How has that reality changed the way that public health responds in smaller, more remote communities?
It just means we need to be aware of what's being contaminated in the drug supply, and knowing how we can best support our communities to respond to overdoses. So we know that with the types of contamination, such as benzodiazepines and their analogs, we know that it's getting increasingly difficult to reverse overdoses, that usual doses of naloxone that we used early on in the crisis aren't working anymore. We need to use more and more naloxone, making sure to use oxygen and other types of life-saving supplies that we can use. So yeah, we just need to be aware of what's happening in the toxic drug supply so we know how we can support our teams to save lives on the ground.
Are there other blind spots that you see in response to these last 10 years, or places where you feel like public health is falling short, you know, due to many reasons, demand, staffing, obviously you mentioned, you know, the increased toxicity of these drugs, changing nature.
Yeah, I think something, you know, especially in rural communities, you know, just making sure that we have services available for everyone that needs them, like harm reduction supplies in places where people who use substances can access them. We, like, with such a large geography, we know that it's challenging to ensure that everyone can access supplies, and we continue to work on that and expand our services and making sure we're working with communities and understanding how we can best provide care and overdose services and harm reduction services for them.
Northern and Indigenous communities have been disproportionately impacted by this crisis, and so what does a culturally appropriate and regionally effective response actually look like on the ground here in the North from your perspective?
It means, you know, working with our Indigenous partners like First Nations Health Authority and our Indigenous health team at Northern Health to ensure that we are providing culturally safe and appropriate services. And we, you know, continue to work very closely with these teams to ensure that services are appropriate.
So Dr. Kling, after 10 years of a public health emergency, do you think that BC is still treating this as an emergency, or do you feel like it's almost become normalized? And if so, what needs to change in the next decade to truly turn that tide?
I think people are still recognizing this is an emergency, but I think doing things like this and recognizing the 10-year crisis, the 10-year anniversary of the drug crisis and drug emergency, I think it's really important just to keep people aware that, you know, for example, our rates in Northern Health, while they might be decreasing, they're still the highest rates of deaths in all of the province. And just keeping facts and statistics like that top of mind, I think is important in keeping keeping people aware and engaged in what's going on with the drug crisis. You know, focusing on preventing deaths in the moment, improving access to care, and changing systems and conditions that increase the risk, like stigma and barriers to care. You know, those are important next steps that we're focusing on in Northern Health to address this crisis.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
No problem. Thanks so much.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.